Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
Hey, everybody. It's Amber, and I'm here today with Chris.
Hey, everybody.
And Steve.
Hey, everyone.
And this is episode number 162 of the Accessibility Craft podcast. If you want show notes and a full transcript, you can find those if you go to accessibilitycraft.com/162. We always start every episode with a beverage. What are we drinking today, Chris?
We are trying another Great Notion beer. The last one we had was named after a frozen tree, but this one is Great Notion Triple Berry Shake. And so this is a tart ale. I think it's been a while since we've had a sour beer on the podcast, but I remember we all really liked the last one. But Triple Berry Shake, they say, is the biggest and baddest of all of their shake series of tart ales. And they fermented it with black currant, blackberries, blueberries, and finished with vanilla.
I am so excited to try this. And Steve wasn't on the episode when we did the Tiger's Blood. We had a guest for that episode. So have you ever had Great Notion before, Steve?
I have not. This is a first.
Awesome. I love their art. You were showing it to the camera.
It's great.
So this is from Portland, Oregon. Yeah. So I don't know if he's a lumberjack or if he's just like a typical Portlandia dude with really baggy pants and his butt area is just filled with berries and he's got yellow suspenders and he's drinking out of a glass that looks like it's filled with berries and he's got a yellow stocking cap on and got a beard. A little more hair than Chris has. But
he's
Chris,
got that sideways mischievous glance.
Yeah.
You know, the pose actually kind of makes me think of the old school sunscreen bottles that had the girl on the beach with the puppy pulling on her swimsuit. I don't know if you remember,
Copper
if you
tone.
Can picture that. Yeah.
And I like their logo is very Portland, too. It's like the crossed axes with a beard and a stocking cap, but nothing for the face. So it just kind of gives the impression.
All right. Be careful when you open yours. I don't know if you can see the top of my beer here, but it started to plan its escape route there.
Oh, no.
I hear steam tapping.
The smell is kind of makes me think of a lambic. It's definitely berry forward on the nose, which is what I would hope for.
Mm. I bought a glass I wanted to be able to see the color.
Chris, did you say berry forward on the nose?
Berry forward. It's very forward or berry forward. You decide.
Oh, it's reddish or purplish.
And it's got a lot of foam. I couldn't pour. Ooh. It says it's one pint in this can, so it's a big can. But with the foam, I couldn't totally fill up my pint glass. So
that's
but it's
good.
Really pretty. It's got like a really light pink foam.
Yeah, that's delicious.
Smells like to me. Mm-hmm. I haven't tasted it yet. It smells like berry flavored emergency.
It tastes better than berry flavored emergency. I'll tell you that right now. It does not taste like medicine. 10% ABV on this, so be careful. This is definitely dangerous territory for how good it tastes.
I haven't even eaten lunch.
Yeah, me neither. This will be a real fun podcast episode.
It's thick. It's got really, really good structure, like nice acidity, super just, I don't know. The only way I can describe it is just like if you took a mallet and rubbed it all over with berries and then just smacked someone in the face with it. It's just like berries.
I get though, but what I really like about it is sometimes when you have things that say, like this said vanilla or something somewhere. I guess it wasn't on the can. You're reading something somewhere else. But, like, I get at the end, like, a cream.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. If you think of, like, a creamsicle, that's kind of what it's like berries and cream. Like, it really does taste like that. And it's got kind of like a creamy lacto
fermentation on it.
We don't do a lot of sours, and I like sours. And this one may be the best one I've ever had.
Oh, really? You put that up there, huh?
Well, let's caveat that with I haven't had a whole bunch.
I do think I like this more than what I remember about the hibiscus one we had way in the early days of the podcast, because that one was sour, but it was kind of one note, like sour, good. This one I feel like is a bit more complex. I can search for and pick out different berry flavors. And they don't say there's raspberry in it, but I swear I taste raspberry in here too. There probably isn't raspberry in it, but it tastes of like raspberry and blueberry. I don't really taste currant.
I have to say, I don't know if you all have visited their website, greatnotion.com, but they must either have an illustrator on staff or pay, like they invest in their designs for all of their different beers. There's like a Yeti with a machine gun, I guess. I don't know. Like and I creepy try that bears, beer. Like rabbits that look like they might be a little high.
I like
a pink buffalo.
The otter, like, and it says, "Welcome back, otter." I might be aging myself. Like, there was a show called Welcome Back, Otter back in the early 80s.
Oh,
yeah. That's probably what it's a reference to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it totally is. It's like an otter dressed up as like a teacher or an instructor or something.
They also make non-alcoholic hop water and root beer and something that is non-alcoholic and called Ripe AF. And they all have like cool, interesting illustrations. I'm going to give this a 2 thumbs up. I really like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that I would normally think to order because I don't always go towards something super fruity. But it's really good.
They've got one called Palpatine. Like, Palpatine is the emperor of haze.
Apparently, they have funny people on staff means. Too that are good at puns.
Yeah, like it's like a Star Wars kind of. It's hilarious, and it's funny that the IPA gets to be the Palpatine.
I would say that this brewery has branding down really well, and it does say they ship some of their stuff nationwide. Did you order this directly from them, Chris, or did you find it locally?
I bought it direct. It's stocked locally at a store here.
So maybe people can find it near them in the U.S.
Shout out. Yeah, if you're in Texas, shout out to HEB's beer program. Like, their purchasers find interesting stuff, and there's always different stuff on the shelf when I go. Well, I am also 2 thumbs up on Triple Berry Shake.
Yes.
Phenomenal, delicious beer. And the brewer should be proud.
Yes.
And contact us. We'll help you with your website.
Oh. So I told people to go check it out. Does that mean that all those beautiful illustrations are missing all text, Steve?
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
I mean,
so
that's an interesting thing, right? How important alt text is to these images, because you don't want to lose that. And how the description of these illustrations has to be almost as creative as the illustration itself.
Yeah, I mean, because it really adds something, I think, to why you might buy the beer or your experience or like understanding of what the brewer was going for.
Yeah.
I do think like that kind of creativity adds to it a lot. And it would be sad to miss out on that if it wasn't described appropriately.
Now, luckily, in this case, the taste lives up. So you could use your taste buds, too.
Yes, yes, yes. Even if you can't see the can, it is well worth the flavor in your mouth.
So good. So good. I'm going to finish this, and I will probably regret it as I'm trying to get more work done later.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look.
It's really...
It's
we'll
a Friday.
See.
Monday
we're making up for
the
last time
this.
Where we had water, right? So it averages out to 5% ABV between the two episodes.
Yeah, you're only allowed to order water like one time. Now we're going to be like, what? No.
Yep. I've played that card. That's done. I can't do it ever again.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that called accessibility craft math there, Chris, what you just did?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Accessibility craft math.
So speaking of math, the WebAIM Million, which is a very big number, report came out for 2026. For folks who are not familiar, this is a project that a nonprofit, they're out of a university in Utah, and they make the Wave browser extension, and they use their rule set to scan the 1 million top pages by traffic just on the internet. I think they used to use Alexa rankings, but that's gone now. So I don't know what they use to determine this, or if they're just scanning the same pages every year and ignoring new websites. But this came out, and I thought it would be interesting for us to talk about.
Yeah, this has become like a landmark time every year when they release this for the accessibility industry, if you want to call it that. Everyone always goes and looks. And I got to say, I was hoping to see the continuation of a trend line, because it had kind of seemed like accessibility was going to hit some kind of ceiling and maybe start ticking down, but it didn't do that, did it?
No. Yeah, so the first thing is they talk about the number of errors that they can detect. And they said across 1 million home pages, they detected 56,114,377 distinct accessibility errors, an average of 56.1 errors per page. Mm-hmm. And that was higher than last year.
Yeah, it actually breaks a trend, right? Like, so the past 6 years, it had been trending down ever so slightly, and it looks like
except for 2024, right? Went up a little bit in 2024.
Yeah, 2024 had a slight jump.
Back down.
Yeah. And then it went down again.
Yeah, yeah. But we are trending up again for 2026, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they do acknowledge that home pages are getting more complex and the number of HTML elements that they see on the page, like they're longer, I guess, is the best way to describe that. So I don't know if that increases the likelihood that you're going to find more problems because there's more components. What do you think, Steve? Do you think most websites still have carousels on their homepages?
Do I think? I mean, they absolutely do. And I feel the horrible pain of having to remediate them all the time.
Oh, man, we're working on a website right now that started with 5 or 6 carousels on the homepage.
All auto-playing.
Yeah.
We've managed to convince them to turn 2 of them into not carousels.
Yeah.
So they're down to like 3 or 4.
The data tells you that they're not really that useful. People are still putting carousels in that hero spot. And it's, I don't know why. I'm trying to cram more information into a smaller area, but it actually doesn't net all that much viewership past the first or second slide. So, I mean, I found it interesting when you said that when they claim that homepages are becoming more complex, I sort of wonder if, I mean, in my mind, I would kind of expect that to go the other way, given people's attention spans these days. I wonder if it's more of a thing of they're consolidating more of the information throughout the other verticals of the website on the homepage to try to capture, because attention rates are shorter and bounce rates are increasing.
Like, you think maybe they're thinking people are more likely to scroll than click? So we have to get more on our homepage so that it's there when they scroll.
I mean, we're pretty conditioned to scroll these days.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think it's the same reason that people are trying to cram as much as possible into their navigation menus. They're trying to alleviate the same sort of thing where it's, we're worried that people aren't going to find the information, so we have to stick it all right here in the hopes that they do. I hope we get to run some experiments around this at some point, but I wonder if that actually gets the outcome that they think it does.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel like navigation menus in and of themselves have become much more complex as the years have gone on. And I think with that, surfacing all that information into a mega menu or of sorts actually opens the door to lots of accessibility issues.
To be determined on whether we'll have one on our new website rebuild.
Yeah.
Can you tell there might be 2 different camps on this?
Well,
there will definitely have to be multiple podcast episodes where we just talk about our new website that we are working on this year. And folks, we really are. I finished a design and content brief, and it's getting reviewed next week. And we've been talking to designers to get quotes. So it is really happening for real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So most common failures, I thought this was interesting. And I don't know. They say homepages are getting more complex, but the stuff that is in this list is super basic. One is low contrast text, found on 83.9% of homepages. Missing alt text on images, 53%. Missing form input labels, 51%. 46.3% had empty links, 30.6% had empty buttons, and 13.5% had missing document language. And I'm just going to be open about lack of knowledge here. You're going to have to help me on that one. What does that mean, missing document language? Is that the language attribute of the page or something else?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're not signifying that the language of this website is in English or Spanish. Yeah. I'm not surprised by these at all, really. Low contrast text, that's definitely always been a big one for us. And that's why we actually put a lot of effort into our color contrast checks. You know, we initially started with PHP and then we moved to, you know, JavaScript scanning and using Axe and stuff to make sure that we're actually detecting those accurately. And we're actually currently working on a way for you to remediate those low contrast issues in real time. So you see them on the page, you fix the colors, save, and it's remediated.
And wait, let's clarify. The cool thing that I saw a demo of was you fix the colors right in Accessibility Checker where it flagged the issues, not you have to go find them and fix them on your page and save your page. You can fix them right in Accessibility Checker.
Yep.
And it will fix them for you.
A no code solution. Yeah.
It's like pick a different color out of the little, what do you call that color picker? You could drag around the dot.
Yeah. It's a web component, just the color picker. The missing alternative text for images. Now, I'm sure that they are trying to decipher between presentation images that are decorative in some respect, but what a lot of people, like if it just doesn't have alternative text, I don't know if they're doing any evaluation on that or not, because that is valid.
I do think Wave is like Accessibility Checker in that Wave has an error for missing alternative text and for empty.
Oh, so this is if the attribute is...
This is what I don't know, but this is what I'm guessing, is that this issue, if it's the exact same name as the way the Wave browser extension works, then this means it doesn't even have an empty alt attribute. It has no alt attribute at all, which... For people who aren't familiar, what this means is that when a screen reader encounters an image with no alt attribute, it frequently reads out like the path or the file name to the image, which could be fine if you're one of those super organized people who renames every image with something meaningful before you upload it to your website, which is maybe just a food blogger.
Yeah.
Everyone else, it's all like Shutterstock _ 5867 92 some really long string of numbers .jpg.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what that means. If this is the same, which I'm guessing it probably is. So it's the same as what we do.
Right.
I mean, it surprised me that these are common failures, because I think when we remediate, these are like things that we see a bunch on people's websites. I think they're also easy to detect with automated tools. It's entirely possible that there are other failures like bad focus management opening your mobile menu that no automated tool can find, and therefore the Web 8 Million is not going to be able to report on it. And maybe that even exists on all the websites, which maybe we could shout out. I guess 4.1% of websites had zero problems.
Yeah.
But they might have manual problems. I don't know.
I mean, how indicative do you guys think that is? They probably do have manual problems. And that's something I frequently tell people, and I usually preface it by saying, I don't like that I get to say this really, because it is a comment on the state of accessibility on the internet as a whole. But if you come up completely clean for automated accessibility tests, you're probably in the top 10% of websites already in terms of accessibility.
Top 4.1% of websites.
Yeah. In this case, like even more, you're in the top four.
Though maybe if somebody has a 100% score on Wave, I think does suggest that they've put some effort in.
Yeah.
Of course they do.
And so it's possible that some of them are actually legitimately 100% or as close to 100% accessible as they could be. Like, they would also pass a manual audit, I'm thinking.
Well, I mean, this is really nuanced, too, because, like, we had this discussion when we were recently revamping our accessibility checker dashboard pages and the reports that get put out, and really trying to think deeply about the language we're using and the numbers we're using and how we're grouping things and stuff like that. And the page in which you're scanning matters a whole bunch too. So out of those top 4%, like you could be scanning CNN.com, right? And like that's a news site with tons of content. Or you could be scanning Google.com, which is like a search bar. And so if an accessibility checker, you scan a page and it says like 100% passed test.
Right.
We're like, oh, that looks really good. But it's like, well, what percentage of those tests didn't even apply to that page?
Because there was not even any content of that type.
So you're getting, you're getting credit for a test that the questions didn't even apply to your situation. There's always that nuance when you're scanning websites, right?
Yeah. So I always think it's really interesting on this report to look at the content management systems. And one of the things that I thought was super interesting before we reveal for folks who haven't seen the report, like where all they are, I want to talk about something that I noticed that was different this year from all prior years, which was that in prior years, this section of the report included WordPress, but it also called out Elementor, Divi, and WP Bakery, which are popular WordPress builders. And way back in 2023, I was like, I talked to them about this. And I was like, can you please clarify for me, are the Elementor and the Divi and all those numbers included in the WordPress number two? And they were like, yes. So I was like, so they're double counting. It was very weird. And then I noticed this year, they did not pull out those three builders. They just left WordPress as its own line. And I don't know if that's based on feedback from me and other folks that was confusing and it muddies the water. I almost feel like you should have WordPress in this view of content management and then have a separate chart that's like, here's all the WordPress plugins or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. Well, do you want me to go through and kind of give people the breakdown? And I'll read through this for the listening audience. And in post, I will put this chart up visually for people.
Sure.
At the top, basically, they sorted content management systems and site builders in descending order from those who fell the farthest below the average number of errors all the way down to the one that was the most above average in terms of number of errors. So best to worst would be the shorthand way of putting that. Adobe Experience Manager made the top. They're on 6,500 home pages. Average of 29.9 errors, which is 46.7% below the average, which I think was that 50 or 51, Amber?
56.1 errors per page. That is the average of everything they scanned.
Okay, so all of these are benchmarked against that. Squarespace is on 2,670, 33 errors, 41.2% below average on that. Wix, 3183, 33.3 errors, 40.6% below average. HubSpot on 4237 home pages, 35.1 average number of errors, 37.4% below average. Typo3 CMS, which I've never even heard of, on 5371 home pages, so more market share than Squarespace or Wix or HubSpot, 38.5 average number of errors, 31.3% below average. Drupal on 18,222 home pages, 41.2 average number of errors, 26.5% below the benchmark. Joomla 3981, 45.7 average number of errors, 18.6% below the benchmark. And then there's WordPress on 252,302 of the home pages. So a full more than 25% of the Web A Million. Average number of errors is 52.8. sitting just 5.8% below the benchmark. And then maybe just put there so WordPress doesn't have to feel bad. Coming in last place, we have 1C Bitrix, which I've never heard of, on 8769 home pages. Average number of errors of 106.5, 89.8% above the benchmark. And that is not a good above the benchmark. You want to be below the benchmark in this case.
So I want to say something yeah. about 1C Bittrex. I also never heard of this. I Googled it. It's like a Russian page builder. I don't oh, okay. know. My assumption is, like, even if you go to information pages for it, it's all in, like, some language characters that are not even the normal English alphabet. Do you think that could impact the wave scan results if it's a non-English website?
Well, how does Wave check for, like, ambiguous anchor text and stuff? Or does it not?
I don't think Wave. No, we have that check. We're better than
that. Okay, that was one that we have that Wave doesn't. Okay.
I will say these numbers, like the number of homepages, I don't know, is indicative of market share, but it's indicative of the share of the sampling size that WebAMillion took. And we did state that we're not 100% sure what they used to define these top 1 million websites. It is interesting that WordPress has the lion's share of those websites, and that's not unexpected, right, with 40% market share. But I don't know if that 250,000 makes that percentage marker easier or harder to hit, you know?
It increases the likelihood that there'll be worse yeah. pages on average.
I mean, it increases the likelihood of a lot of things, right? It increases the likelihood of a more complex page, right? WordPress is a little bit different than Squarespace. Squarespace is more of a non-technical user is serving themselves to build a little website for their small business, right? WordPress is the same, but also WordPress goes into enterprise. And that's when WordPress really spans out into a wide swath of audiences, from the small mom and pop business to huge enterprise businesses, to the White House, to a NASA, you know, like huge websites. So I don't know if that increases their chances to get more issues.
In theory, I would say the huge websites probably should help. There was another part of this report where they talk about the domain extensions or the industry and government, for example. The average number of errors was 42.4, so it was 24% better than the average. But if you just filter down to like a .gov, so like U.S. government, it's 18.5 is the average number of errors. Compare that to the 56. So those are a lot better. Yeah. And so there's no, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think there's any .govs built with Wix or Squarespace. And so, like,
I got it. Yeah.
I think the bigger things that are built with like WordPress or Drupal probably help average out the,
yeah,
I can just go DIY my own website people who are more likely to have accessibility problems, I would think. Right. But
I would suspect too that something that has a not insignificant influence on these scores is capabilities around platform control. So Adobe, Squarespace, Wix, HubSpot, I don't know about Typo3, but the top four at least, I surmise, are closed source proprietary platforms where they control their code base. And so anything that they don't expose for user control or user entry, they have the full control and capability to control those outcomes.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me that this is missing. Shopify is not on here. There's got to be massive Shopify websites that get huge amounts of traffic. But footnote to the point you were making, Chris, which is that we've done auditing and user testing on Shopify websites. And you know what always works great for users is the checkout page. And the reason why is that the website owner cannot control the Shopify checkout page. Shopify does. But if you're using WooCommerce to build your store, if you're using WooCommerce out of the box, they've done a lot of work to make it accessible. But the moment you're all like, I want a fancy plugin that makes my checkout look different, guess what happens? Shopify has made the choice that nobody can modify the checkout page. And in the end, I think that that gives better results.
Yeah, I mean, WordPress is a very free and open platform, and with great freedoms come great responsibilities.
It's like the best movie quote ever.
I want to just go a step further down this report a little bit, and I want to touch on JavaScript frameworks just briefly, and only to compare it to WordPress. So I didn't notice that Astro is listed in the JavaScript frameworks. And if you don't know, Astro is a framework that's been around, I don't know, a few years, but it's recently been acquired by Cloudflare, and Cloudflare has built it into their own WordPress competitor called Mdash. And that came out on April Fool's Day. Wasn't a joke. It's a real thing. But if we look at Astro, it has 5,500-ish home pages that were checked in this report. Average number of errors per page are 9, and percent difference from the median is 84%. So if you juxtapose that with WordPress, it's sitting at 5.8% and Astro is sitting at 84%. Now, these frameworks are quite different. Astro on the surface, this is not speaking about Mdash. Mdash is Astro with Cloudflare's CMS. I think it's the CMS package. I'm not sure, but with their CMS kind of bundled together into one framework. But Astro itself basically helps you build static websites, but you have the option to actually use, you know, dynamic content within those static websites, such as like a little component on a static page. So you can actually build something pretty interesting that gives you that single page kind of feel or look and still have dynamic content in it, but still have a lot of static HTML. And I don't know if I'm just pontificating a little bit that maybe since it is a static site builder and it is built on HTML semantics, maybe that's what bodes well for that having such a low average number of issues per page. Now, this is small sampling. We do have to take that into consideration, but I found it interesting.
I mean, I do too. Compared to React, right?
Yeah.
And that is better than the average, but it's 43.5 errors versus the 9 for Astro. I mean, let's be real. An average of 9 errors per page is almost close to perfect. I don't think there's any other thing on this report that is that close to no problems at all.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it's just interesting.
It's worth a deeper
to me,
look.
This is a newer framework, right? It wasn't in last year's report. Do you have any idea, Steve, on like why this one would be better than React or Next.js or Vue?
Oh, yeah. So I've done some testing. I actually built a little application with Astro, just some internal stuff for us, testing for future things that we're working on. And you couple it with AI, and it's quite enlightening and quite jarring how far you can go, how quick you can go with Astro when you're building something that is basically using HTML semantics. It's getting compiled out as HTML semantics. And that's probably why it bodes well, because it's, at the end of the day, it's HTML. You know, it's not WordPress, with a page builder, with additional page builder add-ons put on there where you have to consider all these other people's technical accessibility debt as well. And AI is very good at understanding semantic HTML. Just like with markup files, AI is very good at it because it's basic and there's really only one right way to do it. It's very semantic the way it's written, and it understands what a heading is. Like, it understands in the order those headings should go. It understands what a landmark is and where it should go. And you couple AI and Astro together and you can build something really quick, really fast. That's you know, native HTML and semantic. Whereas in WordPress, a lot of times you're relying on a lot of humans in between you and your end product. And humans.
So there's fewer content entry issues, you think?
Well, I mean, yeah. And my use of AI is it is a lot of times considering accessibility, at least at a base level, out of the box, especially if you're building in a framework like Astro. It has all this context that this is HTML semantics that need to be followed. Whereas in WordPress, you're layering a lot of things. WordPress core has implications on the output of your semantics. And by and large, built by humans. This is not a slight on humans. Humans are great, and humans can do this better than AI. But then you have a theme, which is built on top of core, right? And that goes in, and that's built by humans. And then you have plugins that integrate into core, integrate into the theme, and you have all of that potential technical debt or potential accessibility debt, which is not a real term. I just made it up right here, right now. But you have all of that potential built into that stack. Whereas if you strip it all back to just you, an AI terminal, and Astro, it's just you three right there building semantics.
That's and things like it have, I think, captured the imaginations of some people. It kind of feels like a next evolution, at least conceptually. I don't know if EM Dash will be the thing, right? But it seems like WordPress has some work to do based on this report and has some catching up to do. Amber, was there a final thought you wanted to share? And I think we need to go to commercial because our intro topic has lasted almost 40 minutes.
No, I mean, I was just going to say, like, I think that goes a little bit back to why we might potentially see fewer issues on these more restrictive platforms like Squarespace and Wix, because of the fact that they don't have the broad contributor community. They don't have the ability to add a lot of custom code in the same way that you can with a WordPress or a Joomla or a Drupal. And so it adds that power, but it also adds problems. So yeah, we can go to a commercial and then come back and talk about what can WordPress do to get better.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalize Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any plan.
All right, so we're back. And of course, this episode is coming out at the beginning of May. And May is GAD. And we always host a contributor day. Always, by which I mean this is our second annual hosted contributor day for GAD, and I'm really excited about it. And I think on the tail of the Web 8 Million coming out, but wouldn't it be great if WordPress could be better than Drupal, right? Which also has the plugins and also fights for market share on the government and the EDUs and all of that kind of stuff. I would love to see that. So I think GAD is a great opportunity to try and make WordPress better, and maybe we can move that percentage point a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would agree. So you keep saying GAD, which for those not listening, could you please describe what GAD stands for and maybe go into a little bit more on why we do a contributor day for GAD?
Yes. So GAD stands for Global Accessibility Awareness Day. I think this year is its 15th year. It's a nonprofit organization to raise awareness about the importance of accessibility, and in particular, accessibility on the web, but they also do stuff around accessibility in products and the built environment. One of the co-founders of GAD is blind, and he is actually the head of accessibility at LinkedIn. And so they have been doing this on the third Thursday of the month for 15 years. And trying to encourage companies and individuals to talk about accessibility on that day and do things to support accessibility on that day, with the idea that it will bring more awareness to the general public if everyone is doing it all at the same time. So that's what GAD is. We do a contributor day because initially, our first couple years that we were involved with GAD, we held a webinar. And there are a ton of organizations that have free webinars on GAD. And I think that's phenomenal. And it is a great way to spread awareness. But I asked myself, is this actually the best way to have impact? And last year we were talking about it internally and we thought, you know, no, just holding a webinar that people can show up to for an hour or 90 minutes, it presents theoretical concepts, it provides some training, but it doesn't actually make any difference on that day. And also there's a lot of webinars happening, so people have to choose, and then it becomes this weird, like, you're fighting for attention on your webinar. And I just felt like it wasn't very impactful. And so we were talking about it as a team last year, and we're like, you know, we've all enjoyed going to WordCamps and participating in contributor days. And then we thought, can we host our own contributor day? And we tried it last year and I thought it was great. And so we're making this our annual GAD tradition. And I'm wondering if we should talk first about what the impact was last year and why we decided to make it an annual tradition. Would you want to talk about that, Chris?
So we led this call with a big, long, you know, thing about how WordPress has some catching up to do. And the amazing thing about WordPress and the behemoth that it is it got there because of people. And I think the power of people and the power of people in WordPress can't be understated. So last year, 86 people volunteered or pledged 382 hours to improve accessibility across the WordPress ecosystem for GAD. And that was on May 15th. So that was 382 hours by 86 people on a single day, which is amazing to see. And we hope that that builds new habits and carries things forward throughout the year and beyond. And we hope to see some of those people back this year. But just a handful of things that happened that kind of jumped out at me. Someone ran an accessibility-focused bug scrub in WordPress core. So any of those bugs that got fixed or scrubbed were, you know, that impacted millions and millions of websites right there. A guy fixed accessibility using Accessibility Checker and Wave on his own website. So that's just one website, but I bet he learned a lot. Someone educated their clients about accessibility and held a webinar for their customers. A couple of guys made the Include Mastodon Feed plugin more accessible. Not sure how many sites that plugin is installed on, but hey, that's pretty awesome. Someone improved accessibility in their YouTube videos. So kind of WordPress adjacent, but it was still accessibility work. And we had multiple people saying that they were, you know, learning and then taking what they learned that same day and going and fixing problems on what they learned that day, which is pretty cool. And that's just a smattering. But I hope it's bigger this year. I hope even more people participate. And even last year for our first year doing it, I was kind of blown away by the response and how many people ended up doing stuff. So
yeah, I think we should shout out RT Camp in particular, which I know is at the very bottom, because I alphabetical ordered that recap post, which we will share in our show notes for anyone who wants to read it. But RT Camp is a company that contributes to WordPress core, and they told all of their employees who normally work on WordPress but don't normally work on accessibility to go work on accessibility things during that day. And on that day, they had 13 employees working on accessibility related things. They collectively pledged 104 hours, contributed to 21 open accessibility issues in Gutenberg, WordPress Core, and Commerce. And they opened 8 pull requests with patches, 2 of which were actually merged during that day into WordPress for a release. So like that right there, they don't normally work on accessibility, these contributors, but I think like that was what I was hoping. I was like, I want to get normal contributors to work on accessibility and be like, oh, I can do this. I can contribute to accessibility beyond. So I thought that was really awesome. And I love that that company was willing to be like, hey, let's tell all of our team to go work on this today.
So for the companies listening, for the individuals listening, whoever you are, what are ways that people can get involved this year? Let's tell them right now.
Yeah. So on the code side, we've kind of mentioned a few of these, like contributing to core. What does that mean? That means actually writing code and patches that can go into WordPress core that you would submit as a PR. But not only that, you can actually go to the track tickets and actually review tickets and just add input from maybe a development standpoint or try to come up with solutions to add to the conversation about an accessibility issue. And you can filter out track tickets by accessibility. And you can do testing. You can test plugins. You can test themes. And then from that testing, you can open tickets. That's actually contributing. You can update your own plugins. You can update other people's plugins. You can add patches. I think sometimes we get caught up that accessibility is only about alt text or it's only about color contrast. But it also can be about language and expanding and making your plugin more accessible to more languages around the globe, which is something that we did last year. We went through in our plugins and we added support for 30-some languages, 32 languages. I don't remember, 34 at this point. I think it's gone up. You can request people to do it in the Polyglot team. But you can also just make your products, your plugins, your themes translatable. And that is a great step to having translations and internationalization of your plugin. So I want to overlook that. And last year, I gave a day and another person on my team gave a day. We made a plugin in a day to add pause buttons to GIF images. And this is a plugin that is freely available on GitHub, which we will link here in the show notes.
Yeah. On the accessibility testing note, I know I was all like, we're not going to run webinars. But then I realized I really want to run a webinar, but it's not a show up and watch webinar. We are going to do a live theme accessibility testing workshop. So I, over the last year with Joel Dolson, put a ton of time and effort into totally rewriting the accessibility ready guidelines for themes for WordPress. And I created a whole process for testing those with the goal that anyone can test. You do not have to be an accessibility expert. You can follow step-by-step instructions. But to make it even easier, I'm going to say this right now. There are today 109 themes that have the accessibility ready tag. They've been tested, some of them many, many, many years ago, many, many updates ago. My hope for the day is that we will get enough people to retest every single one of those themes on the day and be able to share feedback with the developers. I will be running a webinar at 10 a.m. U.S. Central Time, which is 3 p.m. UTC, if that helps folks, where it is a workshop. You'll show up and people will pick themes and get assigned to themes, and I will walk you through the process and you will do it with me. So you'll get to learn by doing and contribute to WordPress at the same time. So I will say, like, that is another way to get involved and help with the project and learn while you're doing it. Do you have any thoughts, Chris, on like other things that maybe non-technical folks can do? Because I know you contributed last year as a, you know, you're not a developer and you're not an accessibility specialist. What would you recommend for those people who want to get involved?
I think for the truly non-technical people who are like, what's a widget or what's the classic editor? I've never heard of that. Who are maybe truly, you know, just getting into WordPress or just starting to do web stuff. I would try to find something that you could do maybe inside of something you're already familiar with. Like maybe it's your own company's website, or maybe it's something you're working on. Find something that you can improve related to accessibility in that. So a simple example in WordPress might be, if you've ever gone into the WordPress editor even one time, you've probably seen that you have the ability to add or modify images. And if your website has images on it, maybe you could start by just adding alternative text to some images on your website. And you can look up an article on what alternative text is and how to add it. We have a very helpful one in the Accessibility Checker documentation if you need something. And just start there. Like if you're looking for something really simple and repeatable, and spend some time doing that until you're comfortable, and then maybe you could try something else. But I would look at it as a doorway into a bigger world. If you struggle, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself either. And the nice thing about the WordPress space and the WordPress community is if you ask for help in WordPress Slack or in other places, maybe on Reddit, there's a great WordPress subreddit, someone's going to help you.
So we should shout out our Facebook group. Our Facebook group is very much like, come and get help from the community. It is not us selling you things. And you can tell because we don't post in there all the time. But on that day, Paula, our content specialist, and Maria, our accessibility specialist, and myself will be available. We will be really paying attention to the Facebook group. So make WordPress Slack would be great if you're trying to contribute on the dev end and you want to talk about specific tickets. But if you're trying to do other accessibility things for GAD, then come in our Facebook group, which you can find linked in the footer of the Equalize Digital website, or you can just search WordPress accessibility and find groups on Facebook. And that is another great place to get ideas and help on that day, because we will definitely be there on that day, as well as a lot of other wonderful people from the community.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in, and we hope to see you during Global Accessibility Awareness Day. Please go to, if you feel so inclined, equalizedigital.com/GAD2026, GAAD2026, and put in your pledge. Whether you're changing alt text, attending theme testing, or doing stuff on track tickets with Stephen William, whatever it is you're doing, we would love to have you come out and pledge.
Thanks.
Yep.
Cheers. Everybody.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital, Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.